Welcome back to another episode of the Grief Observe podcast. I'm your host, Brad Morrell. And if you want to be on the podcast to tell your story of grief, please contact me at griefobservedpodcast@gmail.com or catch me on my Facebook page, facebook.com/griefobservedpodcast. My guest today is Victoria. She is a licensed funeral director and embalmer, and she is known on social media as that funeral director lady. So without further ado, I'll bring her on. Victoria, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. I think you will probably have some interesting stories. And I did have someone on social media yesterday ask me to, because I did have another funeral director on recently, and but I had somebody ask about something specific. I'll try to pull that up while we're talking here and maybe bring it up later in conversation and give a shout out to one of my listeners. Anyway, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay. So I am a, like you said, I'm a licensed funeral director and embalmer, specifically in the state of New Jersey. I have my certificate for funeral service and mortuary science from Mercer County Community College in West Windsor, New Jersey. And I've been in the business for 6 years, licensed for three or four. I can't remember. I was an intern for about two years. So I guess, 4 years. Wow. I can't even believe it's been that long. Been working at the same firm for that time. I started as an apprentice, worked my way up to licensed, and I stayed on as a licensed director.
Excellent. Is it common to stay where you intern at, or is it?
It depends, honestly. It depends on if the firm that you are apprenticing at has room for a licensee. If they want to add another licensee to their roster, they may just say, you know, we don't have a position available for you, and kind of send you out into the wild. And so you kind of have to find another funeral home that's looking for a licensed director. But, you know, in my case, the owner of the funeral home that I'm at was the only director there. And he was willing to take me on as an apprentice. And at the end of my apprenticeship, he said, I'd like to have you stay on as a licensee. And I said, absolutely, because I love it there. So it was a good fit.
Yeah, I wonder how often someone stays right where they're at, or if they hop from one place to another. What have you seen in your time?
Yeah, I think it depends also on your location. You know, sometimes, because finding an internship, especially in this business, is hard. There's a lot of nepotism. So most of the time, a child of a funeral director will go to mortuary school, get their degree, and then they'll have their parent take them on as an apprentice. And so it's harder for those of us that are not in the business, like myself, those of us without family members in the business, to find an internship. And sometimes, I know from talking to former classmates of mine, sometimes apprentices aren't treated very well, which is unfortunate. You know, sometimes I've had friends say that they were kind of treated like a glorified slave rather than, you know, actually learning, which is really sad. But I was one of the lucky ones that found a great funeral home and a great mentor in my boss, who was my preceptor when I was an intern. And that's not to discourage anyone from trying to get into the business. It's just a reality of what our industry is. You know, it's very cutthroat. It's very hard to get in. And once you're in, you gotta be committed. If you're not committed, then you're not gonna like it.
So I'm curious, and you don't have to go here if you don't want, but I'm curious, do you work at kind of a local funeral home or a corporate type funeral home?
It's not corporate. So I
Okay.
work for an independently owned funeral home,
Okay.
in Morris County in New Jersey. And we only have one location, and it's been around since the 1800s. So, we're very well known in our community, very well respected in our community. We have a great reputation for doing good work and for helping families. So, I do have some friends that are at corporate-owned funeral homes, and it's a very different environment. Corporate-owned funeral homes, you tend to be hired for one specific thing, and then you are kind of get pigeonholed into that one thing. So there's like one person hired to be the person that does the arrangements. There's one person hired to that does only pre-need. There's one person hired that's just an embalmer. So I like the independent aspect because I get to do everything. I was trained in everything. I get to do everything. So, it keeps you more in like engrossed in what you're doing. Like you're more motivated to do more because you get it's not you're just not stuck at a desk all day.
I was wondering, years ago there was a lot of independent or family-owned funeral homes, and I know in my area here in East Tennessee, it seems like they're all being bought out by corporations. And I wonder how much of that personal touch is lost whenever, and I'm sure it probably varies from place to place. That's probably kind of hard to blanket that statement, but I don't know.
I think to a point, maybe a little bit of that personal touch can get lost, especially when you're treating something as sensitive as death care, as a corporation. But yeah, there are a lot of businesses that were family owned that are now being bought out by corporate because of the fact that they don't have successors. So those family owned funeral homes, it's gone down, been passed down generation to generation, but the new generation doesn't want any part of it. So unless they can find somebody to sell the funeral home to, then, then the corporation will kind of jump in and say, "Hi, we'll buy it." And so these folks, they want to retire, so they kind of just take the buyout and say, "Okay, here you go." And that's kind of what's been happening all across the board, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you state that, and I'll make a reference again that I did in the last episode, and I'm not telling everybody to go watch this, but I've been watching 6 Feet Under for the first time, and here at, one of these guys' father's funeral, there's a corporate guy coming in saying, "Hey, I want to buy this. I want to buy the funeral home." And it's like, "Wow, that's pretty insensitive." But I guess it does show you that, hey, if the kids don't want to keep this going, then certainly we'll try to swoop in.
They do that. Honestly, 6 Feet Under is probably the most accurate depiction of funeral service that I've seen. Not to say that it's completely accurate, because I have seen certain things where I want to throw my whatever's in my hand at the television and say, "That's not what you're supposed to do." But yeah, there's a lot of different movies and TV shows that I've seen that just make me crazy because it's completely not accurate. And I worry about that so much because it gives people an unrealistic idea of what goes on in the funeral home.
I
And
saw a meme just like that for therapist probably a couple of days ago, and it's Leonardo DiCaprio pointing, and it's like that therapist on TV just misdiagnosed the client, So I can kind of see the exact same thing in your business where you're watching some show and the depiction of your job is inaccurate and probably sets up a lot of inaccuracies in the brains of the laymans, the people who are
Because
not
they think
aware.
it's supposed to be like this, and it's like, well, no, it's actually not. And I think another problem in with that is that a lot of people don't ask about funeral service. They don't think about like, what does actually go on? And they don't have anybody to ask about it because a lot of people don't know funeral director. But it's kind of, I feel in our society, we're very death denying. It's almost like if I don't acknowledge it, if I don't talk about it, then it doesn't exist. But the reality is, we're all gonna die someday. And we kind of have to come to terms with the fact that we're eventually gonna be facing our own mortality. And there are people out there, like myself, that will take care of you when you're gone. And we will show you the respect and the dignity that you deserve. But pretending it doesn't exist doesn't make it go away. And that's the problem that I think is around, and that's why there are all these depictions of funeral directors on television that aren't accurate.
I've often wondered, I often wonder if like funeral homes spread out all these eggshells in the funeral home because so many people, it seems like they're walking on them and they don't say, I'm sorry your spouse died, or I'm sorry, you know, such and such died. It's always, I'm sorry for your loss, or heaven just gained another angel. You know, and I understand people are trying to make others feel well, but I think it's the discomfort that brings out a lot of this. And we try to, I guess, polish exactly what has happened here. You know, somebody in your life has died. And I think there's a lot of times we need to just state that.
Yeah, there's a lot of euphemisms that I wish would go away.
Yeah, maybe you could write that book.
Right? Like, they didn't pass away, they didn't expire, they died.
Oh, expire. I have not really heard anyone say that. Not
I hear it from
unless it's
nurses.
a joke, you know,
I
but
hear
I
nurses say that all the time. Like, nursing
really.
homes will call to report a passing, and they'll say, "We have a patient that expired."
Wow, that
Like,
seems
okay,
so
what are they?
brutal,
A carton of milk?
right?
They expired? No, they died.
Wow. I don't even know what to say on that.
It's kind of ridiculous. I hate it. Just say they died. Because that's what happened. They died. And they're like, when you say pass away, that kind of makes it seem like they went to sleep and never woke up. And that's not always the case. Like, if somebody has a heart attack, they didn't pass away, they died. Because heart attacks are not without some degree of trauma.
Sure.
You know, so I really don't like the euphemisms that people give to stuff like that, but
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing. I'm sorry for your loss. Like you didn't lose them. I mean, they're there. You their life is no longer there, but and I'm guilty of saying some of those things as well. I'm
sure.
certain of it. And I think it's just because it's been so popularized, you know, in our culture that that's just what we say. It's or that's
Yeah, it
what
just
we're
becomes the
supposed to
norm.
say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I wanted to get into is I am certain that everyone that comes on this show has a story of loss. And see, there I go, right there. Story of loss, a
Yeah.
story of someone who has died in their life that is meaningful. And I know that you have one, and I would love for you to share that.
Sure. So just a fair warning, it's not a pretty story. And I'll try to not be super graphic, but there is a level of graphicness to it. So what happened in 2010. And I was 19 at the time. And I just remember coming out of my room. And I heard my dad on the phone, and I just heard him say, "Juliana Coberly, yes, is she alive?" And I just stopped. So I was on my way to the bathroom. I just stopped in my tracks, and I was like, "What?" Because Juliana Coberly was my grandmother's name. And come to find out, my grandmother had been hit by a car while crossing the street. And I guess I should start really from the kind of the beginning of the whole the whole story with that. So she liked walking, and so she would walk everywhere rather than drive. So she decided to walk to the Walgreens in the town where I grew up, and she was going to buy some candy for my cousins who were supposed to come over to her house the following day. It was February, it was the day after Valentine's Day, and she was crossing the street. There was another car that waved to her to go cross the street, so she started crossing, and a 21-year-old man ran a yellow light and plowed right into her. And she ended up she turned and faced the car. So he hit her straight on, broke both of her femurs. She went forward onto the car and then bounced off the car and onto the street.
Wow.
And she was basically brain dead on impact. But she had a pulse, so they took her to the hospital and they worked on her for about 2.5 hours. And they tried to stabilize her. They couldn't get her stable, but like not completely stable, but they got her as stable as they could, tried to bring her in for a CAT scan, and she coded on the CAT scan, meaning her heart stopped. So this all happened, like the incident happened at 7 p.m. We didn't hear about it until about 11 p.m. because she was a Jane Doe. She never took her driver's license out of her car. So she did not have any identification. And they found her last name on a receipt in her pocket. But that's not my mother's name anymore because she took my dad's name. So she has a brother, my uncle, who lives out in Andover. And that's about 2 hours away, roughly, from us. So they sent state troopers up to his house and talked to him, asked him questions about her, this and that. He ended up calling my mom, and my mom couldn't process what she was being told. So she just gave the phone to my dad and said, I don't know what he's saying. I don't understand. My dad gathered that my grandmother was in the hospital and that she'd been in an accident. So he called the hospital. They didn't want to give him any information because at that point she still hadn't been identified. My aunt was a nurse. So my aunt ended up calling the hospital and told them, you need to let this family come and see if they can identify their mother. So we piled in the car, drove over to the hospital. They put us in, it's like a, they have like a little quiet room sort of thing where the doctor will come in and give you bad news. So they came in and they explained what happened. They explained her injuries and they said, you know, we do need somebody to identify the body. My mom got up and I got up right after and I said, sit down. I'll do it. And I don't know how I knew, but I knew for a fact my mother could not handle that. Like my mom was already like going into a state of catatonia. So it's like she's not going to be able to handle that. And somehow I knew I could.
That's amazing
So
at age 19, you said.
yeah,
Wow.
I just had this feeling like she can't handle it, but I can. I'll do it. So they asked me, okay, well, who are you to the victim? I'm her granddaughter. So, okay. So they start walking me down to the morgue. Longest walk of my life. Felt like it took 8 years, but I mean, in reality, it's not a super long walk. It just felt that way. So they brought me into this little room. They had her on a table underneath a sheet, and they warned me, like, we are not authorized to remove any hospital equipment until the medical examiner is contacted, which I know that now because most of the time when we receive decedents into our care, if they come from a hospital, they're going to have IVs sticking out of them, tubes, this and that, because the hospital staff is not allowed to remove it. We end up doing it. So they told me that she's going to have stuff on her. And so they ended up pulling back the sheet. And the sight that I saw is forever burned into my mind. They only showed me her face, so I didn't see the extent to which her body was broken, but I'm sure that it was broken in catastrophic ways. But she had tubes coming out of her mouth. She had something coming out of her nose. She had one of her eye sockets. Her eye orbit was fractured, so the eye was like caved in. The other eye was like swollen to the size of an orange. But through all of that, I looked at her and I said, "Yeah, that's her.
Wow.
That's my grandmother." And she's gone. So they said, okay, they had their positive ID. And after that, the next step was to contact a funeral home. We went to a funeral home that has basically done all of my family members in my hometown. And my mom, like I said, she was catatonic. She didn't know which way was up. My uncle, same thing. They were both just in a state of complete, like, shock, glazed over, can't respond to anything. They don't even know their own names at this point. So it was kind of up to my dad and I to figure everything out and plan everything. And so the funeral home that we dealt with was absolutely wonderful. They were so compassionate and understanding and held our hands through everything. And I thought for sure there's no way we're going to have an open casket. Based on what I saw, no way. Can't happen. And they said to us what I now say to everyone that comes into my care that says the same thing. They said, "Let us do our work and we'll have it open for you. You guys come in privately. And if you want us to close it for the public, we'll do that. And if you don't, then we'll keep it open. But just let us do our work first." Okay. Day of the visitation, I walked in expecting the worst, and she looked beautiful.
Wow.
She looked absolutely beautiful. She looked like her. And I was amazed. I was shocked. I don't know what kind of magic voodoo they did. I can speculate at this point since I know the ins and outs of embalming at this point, but I don't know what kind of magic voodoo they did, but they made her look absolutely wonderful.
Wow.
And so we kept it open and we had an open casket visitation for her. Hardest couple of days of my life having to go through that. Now, my grandmother was very healthy. She was extremely healthy. She would have been 69 that month. Which now at this point, I guess she would have been like, what, 83? Yeah, 83. So she still would have been pretty young. She probably could have met my son, if that had not happened. So she was young and in good health. So this was just a complete out of left field tragedy. And I think one of the saddest parts is that the kid that hit her never faced any consequences, which only added to the grief that we were feeling to know that this kid did this to her. He killed someone, and all he got was a slap on the wrist, if that.
Were there ever any apologies or anything?
No,
Wow.
nothing. And he has social media. I know he does. I've looked him up. Just out of morbid curiosity, I've looked him up. He seems to be having just a fantastic, carefree life. And, sometimes I wonder, like, do you remember what you did? Does your wife know what you did? I'll never know because I refuse to contact him. I just can't bring myself to do that. But yeah, he just, there was never any consequences that happened. It was just a senseless loss of life. And at the time, I was very angry. Going through my own grief, I was angry. I was sad. I was going through all the different emotions. I ran the gamut of all the things that come with grief. And I kept saying to myself, if there's a reason for everything, what was the reason for this? What reason could there be to have this happen? And I didn't realize it at the time, but the reason was to put me on the path of going into funeral service.
I 100% believe that. I've never met you until today, but I can tell you that when I look for meaning through death and I see this path that is paved for someone, especially like yourself, like there's, I don't know, it seems like it's a calling. It's a path of life that is just, it's not for many, right? That it's, there are some chosen, and it, you know, we can talk about it later that, you know, I think in the funeral business, the numbers are dwindling as far as people who are coming in. And part of that could be what you'd stated, you know, lack of internships available and things of that nature. But I feel like the desire for your type of job has gone down over the years. So I feel like, you know, and again, I don't know your grandmother. I can't really give this whole situation a fair shake, but when you see the death and we do at first state, it is meaningless, right? This should not have happened.
Yeah.
But to see, I guess the effect afterwards, how many families do you know that you've personally helped because of that one situation that sent you into this field, right? How many people's lives have you changed because of some trauma in your life?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And it makes it all worth it. It makes it worth it. And I have no way of knowing because obviously I can't talk to her, but I have a feeling she would be proud. She always wanted me to be a nurse or a chemist. And it's kind of funny because now I'm kind of both.
Yeah.
Like my husband calls me Dr. Death. Because it's kind of like, you know, there's a chemistry aspect to the embalming and there's a medical aspect to it as well. We have to be very well versed in anatomy. And also with nursing, there's that bedside manner too. You're taking care of patients. So we're also taking care of the living. We're taking care of the living by taking care of the dead.
Wow. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that you are exactly where you're supposed to be in life. And and I do hate that you've gone through, you know, a trauma in your life like that. And especially at 19 years old, having to witness your grandmother like you've never seen not only her before, but anyone in your life, I imagine. Right?
Oh, yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
And I think too, when it's up close and personal, it's different than seeing something on TV, right?
Yeah.
And I've never seen anything to that degree myself.
Right.
I've been with someone when they passed away. See, I just said passed away again. I've been with my grandfather when he died, and it was an honor to hold his hand as he died.
Yeah.
But I've never seen anything catastrophic like that.
Right. And there's a difference to how people interpret the grief that comes with death. It's almost like, you know, if somebody is sick for a long time and you know that they're sick, you know that they're old and they're sick and they're nearing the end of their life, there is a preparation. You know that the inevitable is coming. Doesn't make it hurt any less when they do end up dying, because obviously no matter what, they're still your loved one. They're still your mother, your father, your grandmother, your grandfather, aunt, uncle, cousin, whatever. They're still your family member. But when it is completely out of the blue, tragic death, not expected, sudden like that, it takes on a whole new life of its own, the grief, because there was no preparation. You can't prepare for a tragedy like that. Like, I honestly think that if my grandmother hadn't died in that way, she'd live way into her 90s. She was that healthy. But it affects you in a different way. Like, obviously, if somebody passes away that's sick, and old, obviously you're still going to have grief, but it's going to be a much different kind of grief than it would be if the death happened suddenly.
One of my biggest questions right now is if this trauma had not occurred, what would you be doing now?
You know, I've thought about that, and I don't know, because it was honestly the experience that I had with the funeral home that took care of my grandmother that planted the seed in my head and showed me the value in what it is that I do. So I don't know what I would be doing if I hadn't taken that leap and said, because I went to mortuary school in 2017. So it was a full 7 years that that idea marinated in my brain. And 2017 was the year I was getting married. So I told my husband, when we come back from our honeymoon, I'm going to go to mortuary school.
How did he take that?
He said, okay, go for it. He was
Awesome.
very supportive. So I did. I applied to mortuary school and started going that fall. Took me about a year and a half to complete everything. And of course, in New Jersey, you have to get a concurrent internship, which means that you have to find your internship while you're in school. Otherwise, you can't take certain classes. That was a struggle in and of itself. But I do everything with my grandmother in the back of my mind. And she is my guiding force. That is propelling me through all of this.
One of the things that you had mentioned is kind of the reason that I had wanted to do this years ago. I was big into art. That was my thing. But I didn't want to just paint or do things like that. I'm like, wow, the reconstruction side of what you do is it is an art. It really is. I remember in a business class in 11th grade, I had a funeral director actually come in and speak to our class. We could pick like, different people, firemen, policemen. I'm like, no, let's get a funeral director in here, an embalmer, and I want to hear what this guy has to say. But that was the reason that I wanted to do it is I just think it's neat, almost like let's take a group of pictures and let's make this person to be as close as possible to who they were. Because I think it is important for a family to see a loved one when they're die, when they die. I think that's a huge piece. I won't use the word closure, but I think it does give them a sense of peace at that
Yeah,
point.
definitely.
So tell me more about the art side of what you do.
It's funny because that whole area of the business is actually called restorative art.
Wow, okay. I didn't know
So, yeah,
that.
it is actually considered an art. There are a lot of things that we do with restorative art. Most common is just using things to get the person's features back into what the family will recognize as the person being themselves. When somebody is old and sick, or not even old, but just sick, there's a lot of changes that happen to the body. You know, they lose weight, they get gaunt, you know, they haven't shaved in God knows how long. So there's a lot of things that we have to not correct, but kind of put back the way they were mm-hmm. to bring the person back to a whole state. And that first starts with setting the features. And that's what we call it when we do things like close the eyes, close the mouth, put the features back together in a way where they look peaceful.
Mm.
The second part of restorative art is, of course, the embalming process. If you have a good embalming, you don't need a lot of cosmetics. And I hate when I go to a funeral and I see the person in the casket with a cake face of makeup on. That's not necessary unless you're trying to hide something.
Mm.
Now, it could be also that the person had jaundice or their skin was highly discolored. In that case, yeah, we do have to use a lot of foundation because they're discolored. But if I knew the person and I knew that they didn't have any of those issues, I hate seeing the cake face. It just makes me so angry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the embalming process will help with the appearance of the skin. It'll help to plump up certain areas and bring a little bit more color back into the face and into the body. There's different chemicals that we use. They're all aldehyde-based, so most often it's formaldehyde. We can also use glutaraldehyde, which is like formaldehyde, but less harsh. And some of the arterial chemicals have what's called active dye. So whatever color the liquid is in the bottle is the color that it actually gives to the skin.
Mm.
Then there are other solutions that are made with inactive dye. And if that's the case, then we can add dye to the embalming solution to kind of trace the fluid as it moves through the body. But it also does give a color to the skin. So good embalming is your foundation for good restorative. After that, when we're doing the casketing and the cosmetology, there is a substance called tissue builder. And it's basically kind of like Botox for the dead. And we will inject it into certain parts of the face to put back the natural appearance. So if a person was older and had jowls, for example,
mm-hmm.
when you're lying down, that disappears. So we can put it back.
Mm.
We can actually inject the tissue builder here on the jaw to give back that appearance of the jowl look that the person had in real life.
Mm.
Or if they were very gaunt at the point of death, usually we'll use it in the temple area because that's a big area that will sink in and get gaunt. The eye socket, sometimes if they have like more sunken eyes, it helps to kind of fill in that area. You can really use it anywhere. We'll also use it in the hands because sometimes the hands will be very skeletal in appearance. And so it kind of gives a nice natural plumpness back to the fingers and the space in between the knuckles and all of that. So that's a really good restorative technique. Cosmetics is also a huge restorative technique that we'll use. And it doesn't have to be any kind of fancy schmancy mortuary cosmetics. Some people use that. We use whatever we can find, whatever looks good.
Yeah.
So normal blush, normal foundation, you don't need a lot. If your embalming is good, you really don't need a lot. We're not trying to, you know, make them look like a glamorous movie star. We're trying to make them look like themselves. Mm. And there's a technique that you use on the deceased that you wouldn't do on the living. Like when I'm putting makeup on a deceased individual, I'm not going to do the same thing to myself. So it's strategic placement of the cosmetics. And restorative art also goes way deeper. If there was trauma done to the face, we can repair the trauma. If there's a laceration, we can fix it. If there is bruising, we can fix it. A lot of the times it's done with wax. We can wax over the area and put cosmetics over it, and you'll never know it was there.
That kind of leads me to a question, especially knowing how you saw your grandmother in the morgue. Mm-hmm. And you didn't think it was possible to see her again in the form that she was the last time you saw her. Have you had any families like that that think there's no way that I can view my family or family member? And you've changed that? Okay.
Yeah. And we have told them exactly what I was told. Let us do our work first. You come in, you can spend some time with them. If you want us to close it, we can. And if you don't, we don't have to. And you can see the disbelief in their face. But then when they come in, they're like, oh my God, they look so good. And then we can come in at when it's time to start the public part of the visitation and say, do you want us to close the casket? And 9 times out of 10, they say, absolutely not. We'll keep it open. They look amazing.
Wow.
Other times they'll say, yes, we want to close the casket because that was their wish.
Mm-hmm.
They did not want an open casket. Fine. If that was their wish, we will honor that wish. We will close the casket. But at least the family got to see their loved one in a more peaceful, whole state.
So what do you want for yourself? Cremation, burial, natural burial?
I haven't decided on the final disposition.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that I want a visitation. I do want to be embalmed, and I specifically want to be embalmed by an apprentice, because I want the future generation of funeral directors to learn from me.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So I know I want that. But I haven't decided. I know I don't want to be buried in the ground, because, I don't know, for me, it kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
In a way. So that either leaves entombment or cremation. And I know entombment is very expensive to buy a crypt in a mausoleum. So I don't know. But yeah, I haven't thought about that yet. My husband jokes that he wants to be cryogenically frozen, and I said, yeah, right.
I told this one on the last episode. Me and my wife were talking about this not too long ago, and when we've been together almost 10 years, and I asked probably in the beginning, and I said, so do you want burial or cremation? And she said, I don't know, surprise me.
Surprise me.
So
it's not a very good surprise.
No. She's like, I won't be here, so it doesn't matter.
There are some people that think that way.
Yeah. So, you know, I told you I had someone yesterday kind of reach out to me on social media and ask, and I'm sure this is the question you probably get so tired of. I can see it on your face. You probably already know it's coming.
Let's see.
it's probably one of top three, I imagine. But this lady's name is Carol Marie, and she was asking, has anything paranormal ever happened to you in the funeral home?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it has.
Anything you want to share, or?
I mean, you're dealing with dead people, you know? And to, like I said, the funeral home that I work for, it's been in existence since the 1800s. So mm-hmm. You can only imagine how many deceased individuals have gone in and out of that building. So Yeah, there's been plenty of times where I feel like I'm not alone in whatever room I'm in. It doesn't freak me out because I know that I'm being respectful. I'm not doing anything out of malice or out of disrespect for the deceased. I'm caring for them. I talk to them. I literally talk to them as if they were still able to respond. And I'll just have a full-on one-sided conversation with, whoever is in the prep room. I'll say good night to them when I turn out the lights. I say good morning to them when I turn on the lights in the morning.
What do
I'll
you
dress
think they would say
them and
back? If they could talk, what would they say to you?
you know what? I don't know. I would hope that they would be maybe grateful that we're taking care of them the way that we are. I really hope that I'm not distressing any of the deceased women that I'm caring for by putting bras on them. Because I know that I've talked to so many women that say, "You better not put a bra on me when I die." And I'm like, "Okay, sorry."
I've watched a lot of videos out there from embalmers and things, and I know a lot that seems to be a common thought or issue. I've heard sometimes there's no clasping in the back. Sometimes they don't want to use them at all.
Yeah.
So what is it with that? Of course, you're
Well,
explaining this to a man, so.
as a woman, I can say bras suck. Bras are uncomfortable. It does not matter what kind of bra, it's uncomfortable. And so, one of the best parts of our day is we come home and we're not going to see anybody for the rest of the day. We take the bra off and it's like, oh, I can breathe. It's that relief. And so knowing that they're so uncomfortable, like, do you really want that woman to be confined to a bra for the rest of eternity? Maybe not.
That
If the
makes
family
sense.
gives it to us, then obviously we're going to put it on.
Sure.
But if they don't give us one, we have nothing to use. So, we make them look nice still, but no bra, no problem. Doesn't matter to us. But yeah, that's probably why, because bras suck.
Well, that kind of leads me to another oddball question. You hear the whole shoes or no shoes thing, but that's not my question. Do you see many people purchasing, and I forget the full name or the name for the full open casket, like where you see the whole person. Do you have that very much? Because it seems like at least here in East Tennessee, it's always the half casket,
Half couch. Yeah,
Yeah, half
it
couch,
depends on the
thanks.
area. So in my area, most common is the half couch. So that's what we call the casket that has the split lid in the middle. So the only the side over the upper body is open and the lower body you don't see. There are certain families that request a full couch, which is the full open lid. But we don't see it very often in my area. I know down in South Jersey, I have a friend who works at a funeral home in South Jersey, and she sees nothing but full couch. For her, it's much less common to see a half couch than it is a full couch. And it varies area to area, to be honest. We don't get very many requests for the full open. But occasionally.
So I want to go back into the emotional side for you. You talked about with your grandmother, you went through, the whole roller coaster of emotions.
Yes.
How do you hold it together as a funeral director and embalmer?
So I can say that it's easier if I don't know the person, which the town that I work out of is a small town, so there's few and far between that I don't know that come into my care, unfortunately. But it's almost like I have this invisible switch in my brain where I'm kind of able to shut off the emotion for a little bit so that I can remain professional. You can't really have a blubbering funeral director at the back of the room crying along with family, because you need to remain that pillar of strength for them. You need to be that person that they can turn to ask questions, to get that comfort from. So you need to be able to compartmentalize to an extent, put your emotions away for the time being. That's not to say that you need to be a totally emotionless robot. Nobody's asking you to do that, but you can't really allow yourself to outwardly display how emotional you may be feeling. When the funeral's done, then I can say, oh my God, that was so sad. That was so this, that, I'm so upset, blah, blah, blah. I can go home and tell my husband, oh, I had such a emotional service today, and it was sad, and it was tragic, and this and that. But in the moment, you have to be that, like I said, that pillar for them. They need to know that they can lean on you. So it's a lot harder when the people are young or their children. You know, it's hard to keep it together. And also since becoming a mother myself.
Yeah.
When I deal with families that have lost babies or children, it's rough. It was rough before, but now it's like doubly rough. Cause then I start thinking about my son and it's like, oh, what the heck would I do if I lost him? I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like this invisible switch that you are able to toggle on and off at will.
Yeah, I get that. I'm an empath by nature. Yeah. And counseling 3 days a week, I've got that same kind of switch where it's like, I can't take 55 clients home with me every night. You know, right. I would be a basket case. So, but as far as my friends and family, it's like I almost own a lot of their emotions for them. So it can be very difficult, but it's interesting that you have a very similar switch to what I have when it comes to separating.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
Hmm.
Because otherwise I would be the same thing. I'd be a complete emotional basket case. It also helps to have a sense of humor about it too.
Mm-hmm.
I think funeral directors as a whole kind of have a dark humor.
I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look at what we're doing. If we weren't able to laugh at something, then we'd kind of go crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you develop different skills to help you through situations like that.
Yeah, that brings on a very good point. You know, if I were to interview your husband, like, what would he say as far as how does he help you recharge or kind of draw you away from work? Can you separate at home?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the type of person where I like to talk about my day.
Mm-hmm.
So he lets me just talk about it. He lets me get all my feelings out. He lets me vent if I have to. Like, oh, I had to deal with this and I had to deal with that and it was horrible and blah, blah, blah. So he'll just let me go and he'll just sit back and just let me rant and rave and do whatever I have to do and talk about whatever I have to talk about. And that usually, he knows that helps me. That helps me to kind of like not hold on to things. Because if I don't talk about it, then it all stays in here and it's like, you know, it just needs to come out of my head.
Yeah.
So in that way, he's very good about that. And then, of course, he's wonderful with taking care of my son when I'm not around.
Mm.
You know, on days when I have to be at work late for visitations, I tell him, you know, I'm probably not going to be home until X o'clock. You're going to have to, you know, give the baby a bath, put him to bed, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. All good. Wow. He's fed, he's bathed, he's asleep, he's good. So I know I don't have to worry about my son being cared for because his dad takes care of everything when I'm not around. So it's comforting that way.
Yeah, that's great that you've got that support at home.
Yeah.
Are there any families that you can recall, just anyone that stands out as far as just some
family that you really helped, or a certain situation that you could share of how you really changed their aspect, it even post burial, just as far as the grieving process or anything like that?
Yeah. We actually do have a bereavement group that meets at the funeral home twice a month. That we created because we did see that there wasn't a lot of options nearby in our area for things like that. And it's so important for families to have that outlet. And especially families going through traumatic deaths, I always say, you know, if you're interested, not saying that you have to, there's no obligation, but if you're interested, we do have a grief or bereavement group that meets at the funeral home twice a month with a licensed counselor. She's wonderful. And, you know, we'd love to have you. There's no charge for it. If you're open to it, you can. We also offer a Zoom call. And if you don't want to come in person, if you're uncomfortable, you can also ask our counselor for a private session if you want, you know, whatever you want to do. So I think that helps a lot of the families that we serve. But yeah, there are a lot of families that I see quite often still that always say something to me and thank me for what I've done. In particular, a woman I saw last night, actually, I was working a visitation last night, and this woman that I buried her husband a couple years ago, and he was very young. I say very young. He's middle-aged, but to me, like, that's young. Like, nobody should be dying in their 50s. But he was very ill. And she came in not knowing what to do. And I was able to guide her through things. And I told her, like, leave everything to me. I will take care of everything for you. You don't have to do anything besides get me pictures. Send me pictures. That's all you have to do. Sign some paperwork and send me some pictures and we're good. And she and her sons, they had two sons, young sons. She still, every time she comes to the funeral home or if I see her in town, she'll always come up to me and say hello to me and ask me how I'm doing. When I had my son, she asked me about my son. I ask her about her boys, and she's always saying, like, oh, you guys, you did such a wonderful job, and we thank you so much for helping us through this and that. And stuff like that always warms my heart.
Yeah.
You know, families that will give me a big hug and say, thank you for everything. Thank you for your help, this, that, the other thing. And I try to follow up with my families too. You know, we try to send cards a year after. I'll send a thank you card to the family after the services are over, just thanking them for placing their trust in me for caring for their loved one.
Yeah.
But usually on like the 1 year anniversary of somebody's passing, I will send out a card to that family and say, you know, I just wanted to check in with you. I know that the anniversary of so-and-so's passing is coming up, and I just wanted to say that whatever you need, I'm here and I'm always thinking of you, that sort of thing.
I think that's important to know for a grieving family, that it's not just about dollar signs. You know,
right.
that you know, the person in charge of my loved one really does care.
Yes. And that's the most important thing, because I mean, if I wanted to make tons of money, I could go and work on Wall Street if I wanted tons of money.
Sure.
But I'm not in it for the money. The money's a nice bonus. You know, I'm able to eat and
right.
You know, get diapers for my kid.
Yeah.
But that's not the reason that I started in this field. My whole goal was to care for the families and to help people the way that I was helped when my grandmother died. If it weren't for the funeral home that we dealt with and that family, it's a family-run business as well. If that family had not held our hands and guided us through all the things and said, this is what we need. We'll take care of everything else. All we need from you is X, Y, and Z. That's what I want to do for other families. And I mean, I've had my share of tragic deaths in the funeral home. And those are the ones where I really put on my battle helmet and say, all right, I've got to help this family. I have to do whatever I can to help this family because I do not want their grief to compound.
Yeah, definitely. Because that's when I see people in my office, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and compound grief is the worst.
Yeah.
It manifests itself in such destructive ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I don't want to happen. Like, you don't want a family that's grieving the loss of a loved one to have their grief compound itself, and then they develop these self-destructive coping mechanisms.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Victoria, I really appreciate you being here, and I want to give you the last words and anything that you think we've missed or anything else that you want to throw out there. And I will go ahead and tell you, too, that it's an open invitation if you want to come back again. I would love to have you back on. This has been very informive, and I'm glad that you shared a lot of your story with us today.
Yeah, but, no problem at all. Again, thank you for having me. And it was great to actually be able to tell my grandmother's story.
Yeah.
In, you know, more details. And so what I will say, when it comes to grief, I think one of the most important things is to not bottle it up.
Mm.
You need to be able to talk to somebody, whether that be your best friend, your spouse or partner, a counselor, somebody. Like, just talk about it, because if you don't talk about it, that's when it will back up and you'll start getting that compound grief type of situation going on. And you also don't have to be ashamed of it. There are so many people out there that are walking around with some type of grief in their hearts. And what people need to understand is, some people will say, like, oh, it gets better with time. Yes and no. The grief is always going to stay the same size. You know, that grief, it never shrinks. It never goes away. It's always going to be that same size. You, as the vessel around it, grow. You grow as a person, and it looks like the grief is shrinking because you're growing around it. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people need to know, is that grief is never going to go away. Like, my grief has never gone away. I have grown as a person. And so my grandmother and the grief of her loss will always be with me, but it's not going to run my life.
Well, I am certain she would be very proud of where you are today. Think so. Yeah.
Thank
yeah. Well, thank you for being here. And listeners, thanks for tuning in to the Grief Observe podcast. Again, if you want to be on the show, contact me at griefobservepodcast@gmail.com. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll catch you next time. Have a great day.